This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Hey there. Welcome to the very first episode of the Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. My name is Alice Wong, and I am honored to be your host. With a gazillion podcasts out there, you might wonder, why this one? Why now? The short answer is, I don't see shows about disability culture and politics by NPR or other major media organizations, and I'm not waiting around. The revolution is here. One podcast, one transcript, one tweet at a time. Oh yeah, and I just want to make it clear that disability visibility isn't visibility in the literal sense. It's about creating spaces by us and for us. It's about our identity, pride, and culture. It's about sharing our community stories in our unapologetic lives with the world. Today's guests are Andrew Polray and Greg Baratan. The three of us are co-partners in Crypt the Vote, an online movement encouraging the political participation of disabled people. This episode was recorded late July, days after the GOP healthcare bill died in the Senate. We look back on the attempt to repeal and replace the ACA, what Medicaid means to disabled people, and the activism that took place all year long in opposition of the bill, especially the activism by ADAPT, a national grassroots disability rights group that was instrumental in creating what Representative John Lewis calls good trouble. Are you ready? Away we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, well, I'm Andrew Polray, and I'm one of the three people involved in doing Crypt the Vote. And I've been physically disabled all my life. I have arthrogryposis. And so I worked in a center for independent living for about 22 years, and 12 of those was as executive director.
I'm Greg Baratan. I'm a disabled activist, scholar. I guess I self-identify as neurodivergent, and work as a policy analyst for the Center for Disability Rights. I'm a member of ADAPT, and more importantly, I am also a co-founder of Crypt the Vote, along with the two of you.
And we have to add that you are actually kind of the originator. You came up with the idea of doing something online, and you were the one that brought Andrew and me into this. So, in a way, you're like the godfather.
Oh, no.
The Godfather.
That works for me. That's okay. Right.
So let's talk a little bit about just reflecting on disability activism this year. I mean, especially let's talk about the GOP healthcare bill that was, you know, in the House. It's known as the HCA. Then it became the BCRA, and then it mutated into this ORRA. And, you know, we are talking today on July 29th, and just 2 days ago, the bill was killed in the Senate. So let's talk about, I guess, how we're feeling about just the roller coaster ride and just what you observed and what you experienced.
Can we just start by saying, let's hope it sticks this time?
I agree. I was going to say, you know, that's one of my reflections is that I think that this is probably going to be something we're going to have to deal with in some way, you know, for at least another couple of years, probably off and on. It feels like we've reached a threshold or a certain turning point, but that doesn't mean it won't come up again.
I think the danger will at least last until, you know, people start running for midterms. Mm-hmm. I can't see them trying to pull this during an election unless it's somehow a stunt to play off the Democrats, but I don't know.
And also, we also have to keep in mind that, you know, legislation isn't the only way to dismantle Medicaid or other safety net programs. There's a lot of decisions that can happen, you know, from CMS and other departments. So we all gotta be vigilant on that. And I definitely think that, you know, what we've seen in terms of people sharing their Medicaid stories, that it'll still really be needed throughout the entire, you know, 4 years, hopefully just 4 years. But yeah, I think that it's been really a great awakening in the sense that it's been finally, you know, the non-disabled people have a little sense of what Medicaid is, what it does.
Yeah.
And just how many people it reaches.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one of the good things is, and it's just my instinct on it, is 6 months ago, I would not have said that there would be as much support for Medicaid as there is right now. And not just with the disability community, but overall. And I think what you just said is correct, that people have woken up to realize that Medicaid is a thing and that it's a thing that people actually like and appreciate. It's not some sort of crappy, expensive entitlement that nobody really likes. People actually appreciate it. You know, now, of course, we have things that we want to change about it, but as far as, no, there was sort of an image before, I think, that it was people vaguely thought that even the people that were on it sort of despised Medicaid and wanted to get off it as soon as they could kind of thing. And that's just not really the case. You know, surveys show that people who are on Medicaid are overwhelmingly happy with it. And that half the reason that people don't like the marketplace exchanges is because they'd rather be on Medicaid, you know, then pay through the nose mm-hmm. for a sort of half-hearted private plan.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also speaks to, you know, part of the reason why people are, you know, satisfied or, you know, happy for Medicaid is because, you know, so many people have been uninsured or discriminated against because of their pre-existing condition, and that we still live in a country where, you know, healthcare is not guaranteed for every single person. So, of course, we're going to be very thankful and reliant on Medicaid because we're still not at that point where everybody's covered. But I also think that, you know, also I think of what I really appreciated were these stories about how Medicaid really supported people in education, you know, like public schools. Like, people did not realize the reach of Medicaid beyond poor and disabled people.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's another thing that, like, oh, my parent who might be in a nursing home, like, that might be a risk. Or these kids who need, you know, services at school. Like, oh, you know, it's like kind of broadening the base of the reality of Medicaid, which I think, you know, in a way, it was like a good. It was good in terms of getting non-disabled people engaged and aware that, you know, it's important to everyone.
Yeah, I think one of the heartening things has been seeing people realize what value Medicaid adds to our society, that people are able to work and live and raise their families, go to school, give birth to healthy kids, because of what Medicaid provides. And I think in that way, Andrew, you're right. It helped Medicaid reclaim its good name. I mean, as you said, no one has been more critical of Medicaid's flaws than the disability community. But we were never advocating doing away with it, but fixing it.
The Republicans, I think, have made a mistake in thinking that complaints about a system mean they have a license to just tear it up. And I think they're finding out that they kind of don't, hopefully.
Well, right. In the sense that they want to tear it up and not really even have a plan for something that's similar or comparable or better. I mean, that was a huge, 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 red flag. And I think, clearly people, saw through that.
I think they put their dreams of serving a certain constituency ahead of serving their whole constituency. And, that's never a good recipe.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at Senator McConnell at Kentucky. Kentucky has so many people that need healthcare.
Yes.
Well, that's the hard, hard kernel that we may never fully crack, which is there are people who are fundamentally, they need these things, but for a variety of reasons, they do sort of on a level despise them. So you get lots of people in places like Kentucky who gripe and moan about the fact that their neighbors get Medicaid and they don't, or this person gets Medicaid and shouldn't, and they complain on that moral plane about, freeloaders and all that stuff. And then the politicians take that and say, okay, so clearly my people don't like Medicaid. And it's not quite that simple. Even the people that make these sort of really disgusting comparisons and criticisms, that doesn't mean that they don't need it. It doesn't mean that they, if they could get their heads around it in a different way, they would probably support it.
Well, it's also funny that, there are those folks all over the country, not just in the middle of the country, not just in the South, but everywhere. They don't realize that the plan that they're on is funded by the ACA. I mean, they may rail against President Obama. Just let's face it, I think that is a big part of why people were so against it, is that this was passed by the first black president. And some people just will never accept that, Yep. And I think we got to bring up that sense of hate.
I've heard that they're described it's like a secret welfare, right? That certain people believe that all the good things that Obama did or that Democrats try to do are for other people, not like them, right? And that there are people who take that racism, for instance, of not liking the first black president, and they take it a step further and say, well, all these things are really for his people. Right. And then you can go into ableism on that and say, well, all these disabled people get this, that, and the other thing. I don't get anything. Where in fact, like Obamacare took Medicaid and expanded it to people who weren't disabled, who weren't super duper poor or only moderately poor. And so the thing that they think it should do is exactly what it did. And it just boggles the mind.
The interesting thing for me, Alice, you mentioned people all over the country not realizing they're on, ACA funded plans. I think part of what we've seen is people start to realize that they are, and that, people they know depend on Medicaid across the country. And that's why, we've seen so many people come out. All over the country. I mean, there were protests in 30 different cities.
That's fantastic,
isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
And I'd like to say it was all adept, but there were plenty of people that from non-disabled communities that stepped out and got in line and said, I'm against this too.
You know, speaking about protests, you know, I do think that one of the most, you know, visible and really just captured the moment so well is with, you know, this whole, you know, summer of ADAPT. And, you know, you are a member of ADAPT Bridge, and you were at the, you know, Capitol, and you were arrested at the, in front of Senator McConnell's office, and with, along with, was that 40?
McConnell's, I believe it was about 45, I could be.
Yeah, about 45 other folks. At that, I think that event especially really started the ball, even though you all were protesting way before that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, I guess your activity with ADAPT this year, and just, you know, what you thought in terms of the, what you saw on the ground, and just the kind of importance of, like, direct action.
I mean, I've been asked a lot why things took off with McConnell's office, and part of it may just be luck. We like to say, you know, I've heard Bruce Darling say, you know, we count on the ADAPT gods who've gone before to look after us, and that may be part of it, because it just so happens that McConnell's office is just down the hall from the press office. And so they immediately heard us, you know, chanting and came out. And so the cameras were there almost from the second we started. And that, I mean, I'm told that the policy's changed and they're actually kept a bit further away now. But it's, you know, I think that was a big part of why, you know, the press coverage was there. As opposed to, say, you know, earlier in the year when we occupied the Capitol Rotunda, you know. But I also think the press were looking for a way to focus on this bill. Mm-hmm. And they knew people opposed it, mm-hmm. But didn't have a face or voices to put to it. Mm-hmm. And so, I, you know, to an extent, ADAPT gave them that.
You know, I think one of the subtler ways that it worked well was that I think people pretty quickly saw that it was not your typical part. And I want to say this carefully, because, you know, but I'm going to say kind of like not your typical part of the quote unquote resistance, which is not to say that the resistance is, overall, in a broader sense, is unimportant or silly or anything like that. But there, it was less easy to blow off the ADAPT people and just say, oh, it's them again. You know, those people that always protest stuff, or those people that, you know, are the usual suspects in people's minds of who hate Donald Trump, right? I feel like there were, I remember when it was just starting, and me, what, not being there, but kind of looking from a distance, it was great when some trolls in the very beginning started saying, oh, these are either that you guys were all paid protesters, or worse, that you were just sort of mindless dupes for the socialists and the, you know, the other parts of the resistance, like these sort of nefarious bigwigs obtained you guys to go and do it for them. And it was so completely wrong. It was like more wrong than usual, because ADAPT, if you know anything about ADAPT, they don't take anybody's orders, let's put it that way. And to call ADAPT, or to refer to these ADAPT protesters as in any way being just sort of foot soldiers, it's like anybody looking at it for a moment would realize how wrong that was. And I think that helped a little bit, because people said, yeah, you know, you can't just blow these people off. They're in it for real. This is real for them. This is not an ideological game.
The thing about ADAPT, I mean, ADAPT can play nice, ADAPT can play uncooperative. It depends on what we're met with. You know, we had a bunch of Republican senators who generally wouldn't talk to us, who fled, who sent the police to kick us out. In cases where we, you know, where a senator was willing to listen, and you know, we spoke to Collins, Senator Collins, and you know, she was kind enough to listen to us. And no one occupied any offices of hers because she just sat and talked to us.
Right, and I think this is where, you know, in terms of different approaches, right? Like, you know, usually direct actions are kind of like, not to say the last resort, but kind of like, you know, the secret weapon. And you only use it when you absolutely are, you know, forced to use it. And I think this is another thing that, you know, a lot of people who are not activists or not interested in activism, they see it as this, you know, I've seen, you know, people ask, why can't you work with people? Why can't you, you know, tone down the rhetoric? You know, why can't you be nicer to really get people to cooperate with you? And you know, there are people that really truly believe that that is the way to make change. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, for marginalized folks, we have been trying hard to work within the system, to be conciliatory, to be open-minded, to be, you know, to extend the hand. And oftentimes we're shut out. And you know, there is a place for anger, there is a place for disobedience.
Well, I mean, I think where we've had that opportunity, we've taken it. You know, we worked with Representative Sensenbrenner and Senator Schumer to craft the Disability Integration Act. You know, that was ADAPT. That was not us locking ourselves in their office. It was us talking to them. And so, you know, when those opportunities have been available, we've taken them. But yes, as you said, most of the time, you know, the instinct is disabled people. They've got no money to give to campaigns. They, you know, may or may not turn out. We don't know because we have no data. So let's just ignore them.
For sure. You know, one thing I wanted to say about, like, just in general about disability activism right now is that I'm kind of happy about is that I don't know if it's on purpose or just by chance, but I like the fact that the disability activism hasn't really – has been very focused and disciplined on issues – and their actual effects, rather than sort of going along with the sort of obsession with Trump. You know what? If you know what I mean, like Trump the man, Trump the weirdo. it's not like we don't have those feelings, perhaps, but they're not really part of that because it's not all that relevant at the moment.
Yeah, and also the whole like. Again, you know, the other aspect of, you know, the resistance is the, you know, all three of us are on Twitter, we've seen, you know, just so many different, like, ableist comments about Trump, and I think, and about, you know, just the way they're talking about the issues, and, you know, that in itself is problematic, and it just goes to show, like, how far we need to go, and the fact that, you know, most of what we see in terms of disability activism is very substantive, and it's about the bigger picture versus this cult of personality.
And we've gotten to see that close up. I mean, the fact is, Crip the Vote, you know, could have easily degenerated into I like this politician and that politician, but it never did. I mean, the to the community's credit, everyone, almost without exception, kept it on the issues. Whether it was during debates or whether it was one of the chats we had on a particular topic, it never devolved into partisan crap, or it was always about how this will affect our community.
We've been at this for now, talking July 2017, so it's about, we've been in existence for over a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Originally we were gonna wrap it up after election day last November, and I'm so glad that we decided that this community is, there's still a huge need for it, and it's only gonna continue onward. It's much more than just about voting. It's about political participation. It's about, having a voice. And it's also about just having a space for conversations. For the listeners who don't know, CryptoVote, most of our activities are on Twitter, and that we have about once a month, roughly about once a month, a Twitter chat about some sort of disability issue. So, just what were some of the highlights that you both want to recall from our last four chats?
I think more than any particular chat, what sticks in my mind is that we're continuing with these topics that some of them aren't really on the front burner otherwise, and especially with the healthcare thing. I mean, it would be understandable if we all did nothing else but think about healthcare for the last 6 months. But at least with our chats, we would take a little time each month to look at a topic that's important but maybe has fallen off the radar. And I think that's really important going forward, because there's all kinds of issues that matter to our community that aren't necessarily burning right at the moment, but they could be at any time.
The one on the media, I think, was kind of amazing for me, just seeing the outpouring we got. There was a lot of frustration that people seemed to finally be able to give voice to.
I agree. I feel that way about the death penalty chat, because I mean, similar to TL, who also guest hosted our chat last year on mass incarceration, I feel like, I am still really shocked that, the death penalty issues are not a priority in terms of the so-called disability rights, community.
And that's an evolving process for most people, for a lot of people. Is evolving from thinking of disability as a fairly simple and narrow range of issues to being something that relates to, a huge tent of issues.
Yeah, there's so many different issues in terms of race, class, and disability that's really just not, and I think that's another thing that we could do in terms of, kind of pointing the direction to these issues that may not seem as our issues, but to say that, yeah, they are our issues. For more about CryptoVote, you can check out our blog, cryptovote.blogspot.com. If you're on Twitter, you use the hashtag CryptoVote, and follow Greg at GREGGBERATAN and Andrew at ANDREWPULRANG. You can reach me on Twitter at DIS V-I-S-I-B-I-L-I-T-Y. For more about ADAPT, go to adapt.org. This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project, an online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. The audio producer for this episode is Geraldine Asu. Introduction by Latif McLeod. Theme music by Wheelchair Sports Camp. If you enjoyed this episode, I'm going to ask you to do two things. One, subscribe to the Disability Visibility Podcast on iTunes, and support the work of Creating Disabled Media at our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening, and see you on the internet.
Rock into the blast off, stop, drop, dance off.